Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Reverend Richard Rehm. He is the pastor emeritus of Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, where he served for 37 years. He graduated from Hope College and Western Theological Seminary. He continued his studies at the University of Leiden in the Netherlands and the University of Michigan. He was ordained in 1960 and served as the pastor of the First Reformed Church of Spring Lake until 1964, when he became pastor of the First Reformed Church of Midland Park, New Jersey, until 1967. Returning to his first pastorate in Spring Lake in 1971, he preached and taught out of the rich resources of his European studies and began cautiously bringing to expression his deepening insight into the biblical story and theological tradition. Richard Rehm's journey is important in part because it is reflected of the questioning, the yearnings, and the gradual revision of beliefs that many of his contemporaries have experienced and continue to. And it's important also because of the affirming and inclusive way his questioning was done and his thinking evolved, keeping the core of the gospel, that is, the loving way of Jesus, intact while he explored new understandings. Richard Rehm has been a leader in the interfaith movement here in Western Michigan, and we are so pleased to have him here on Common Threads. Reverend Rehm, welcome once again.
Thank you, Fred.
So last week we talked about your beginnings, growing up in a very pious, reformed home, your education, and your new understanding after your time in the Netherlands of the Christian story. So let's now come back. You're back in the United States. You're in Spring Lake, and you're at, I believe it is called, the First Reformed Church of Spring Lake at that time.
Right.
And it changes into Christ Community Church, although your affiliation with the Reformed Church in America is still intact at that point. Tell us about that transition from just the name change from First Reformed to Christ Community. Why was that important?
Well, I think it was a statement to the community that we were trying to be more than we had ever been, and that we were welcoming people from different backgrounds and experiences. Actually, Fred, the community idea came from Robert Schuller. About the time I got back to Spring Lake, Bob Schuller was holding the Institute for Successful Church Leadership. And a couple of my people said to me, you know, you've been out of the country 4 years and out of the pastorate, and things have happened, and we should send you to the Institute in California. And I said, well, not alone. And so eventually, at least, I guess, 10 or 12 of my people went with me two or three different occasions to that institute. And the thing that I'm telling you this because Bob Schuller was saying, community is the word. Not Reformed or Christian Reformed or Presbyterian or Methodist, but community. And so we came back, and at one consistory meeting, just threw that out, and from that we became Christ Community Church. And those were names that registered: Christ, community. And it was not an attempt to flee the Reformed Church or deny the background at that time. It was simply attempting to say something new in this community where the church had been for, 100 years. And that was the reason we did that. And consequently, we found people did come who didn't realize they were entering a Reformed congregation.
Now, what year was this, approximately?
I missed that.
I said, what year did this happen, the change of names?
This happened in, I came back in 90. I started again at Christ Community in 1971. And it went from there.
Okay, that sounds very prescient, because I don't think at that time there was as much of a movement to
blur the lines of denominations as you see today. There are so many Reformed churches, Presbyterian churches, Methodist churches that the denomination is no longer the headliner, right? It's the name of the church, and in small print below, you know, a member of the Reformed Church of America or Methodist, United Methodist, whatever it is, right? You were a little bit ahead of your time, am I correct?
Yes, I think you're right, Fred, and you're right about where it is today and the playing down of the, denominational lines. So we were, but then I'll have to give credit to Robert Schuller, who was way ahead of his time at the time, and I think he read that quite well, and our experience with it was very positive.
And at that time, when you changed in 1971, your theology had already changed. You were already moving in a different direction, right?
Yes, that's right. I had gone to study with in Europe and with Professor Perikoff because I had hit the wall, as it were, and I needed a new story. I mean, I needed a new understanding of my own story. And so I came back with that, stated very honestly. And because I had the previous relationship with the people, I think there was already a trust element there so that we could move ahead.
You know, Dick, this is my experience in working with Christian pastors over many years now. Pastors who come from a more conservative theological foundation, when they preach and when they teach, what you see is what you get. That is to say, they are sharing their deeply held beliefs as they understand them, whereas many of the more liberal pastors, they tend to play their hand close to the vest. They don't always completely come out of the closet, so to speak, in terms of how liberal they are. You know, they're now at level 10, but when they're in the pulpit, they only come out to like a level 5 or a level 6. If you understand what I'm saying,
yes, mm-hmm.
they want to bring the congregation with them. But if they came right out of the closet and says, "Listen, this is what I really feel about the Christian story. This is where it's at." They're afraid that they would lose people tremendously and maybe even jeopardize their ecclesiastical credentials. How did you feel coming back to Christ Community, and taking it in a different turn? And being open about just exactly where you were?
Well, that's a very good question. I think, Fred, the answer lies in the fact that the people knew that I was on a journey. I have one good friend who comes out of the Christian Reformed Church formerly, and very, very knowledgeable and astute. And he said, you know, if you had sat, I sat on a stool when I preached. He said, if you'd sat up there and told me this is the way it is, I would have resisted. But he said, you always said, I've been thinking about this, and you invited me to think along with you. And I honestly think that's the nature of my pastoral experience in those years of great transition. I'm sure there were times when I had thoughts that I did not share yet. But even when I did share them, I shared them not as conclusions that I had reached, but as issues with which I was dealing and questions that I was asking, and I invited the people on a journey with me, and that was quite magical.
I can imagine. I think that's a very wise modality to use the questioning as opposed to, you know, hey kids, this is the way it really is. But I'm still guessing, and perhaps I've heard this. In this transition, you weren't able to keep everybody, right? There were people that who just felt, no, this is not our cup of tea. We are looking for a church with a more consistent foundation, a reform foundation. Is that correct? Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely happened. And so it was two-way traffic. Fortunately, that incoming was exceeding the outgoing, but there were always those who could not follow me. And we tried to deal with that graciously, understanding that to be the case. So it was a very dynamic situation, Fred. And I think there were people who were on the journey with me. There were some that stayed in spite of me, and there were some who said, "We can't go that route."
Understand. And so let's move on. I think this is probably now is it the 80s or 90s? When did you have serious issues with the denomination itself? Did it start earlier on and just come to a head many years later, or what?
You're right. It was in the 90s, and there was an interfaith experience, Fred, that you'll appreciate. In one of the early dialogue sessions, the whole day dialogue sessions, which Sylvia Kaufman and the Jewish Christian Dialogue Committee put together, one of our members was aware of that, and he said, "You know, the Christ Community team, you ought to go for the day." Well, it happened to be Rabbi David Hartman from Jerusalem, and Bishop Christer Stendahl, who was at Harvard Divinity School at the time. And one spoke in the morning, and the other responded. The other spoke in the afternoon, and the other responded. And in the evening was a kind of a question and dialogue session. And at one point, David Hartman, the Jewish rabbi, said, "Christer, why do I have to deny your joy, or why do you have to deny my joy? Why do I have to deny your truth, or you deny my truth?" And I got thinking about that. And then at another point, David Hartman said to Christer, they were so beautiful men, and Christer was older at the time, and David said, "Christer, do I have to become something more than I am to be a child of God?" And Christer just said, "David," and you could tell they loved each other. He says, "David, I'm so tired." He says, "Christer, you're not too tired." And I, in my heart, said, "David, obviously you don't have to become something more than you are." And it was a turning point for me, Fred. So from that point on, I began to open up to the whole interfaith situation. And at the time, I was also invited. The Reformed Church established a theological journal called Perspectives. And I was invited to be one of the board of editors, and I was invited to write articles. And out of that experience, that interfaith experience, and that sense of God's grace as being all-inclusive, I wrote an article on the grace of God. Well, the classes, the governing group of the Reformed Church locally, they held a session about it, but they didn't get rid of me at that point. I got a lot of negative letters to the editor in the journal. But it was more the gay issue that brought the classes an attack on me, Fred. It was a time when we were having some gatherings for AIDS victims and that kind of pastoral care event. And there was a man there that I had never met. He had a clerical collar on. And I introduced myself, and I found that he was trying to found a gay church congregation. And he was meeting in a bar in Muskegon, in the basement of a bar on Sunday night. And I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, we approached a dozen or so churches, but either they said no or they didn't say anything." And I said to him, "Well, you know, we have a chapel here if you'd like to use it." And he looked. And the next thing we knew, they were using our chapel on Sunday nights, and they were using a classroom during the week. And it was fine. I can remember in my consistory bringing this question, and one of my young deacons beautifully said, "Well, what would Jesus do?" Quoting his pastor back to him, I think, to me. And anyway, that was the issue. That was the catalyst that got the classes after me. And then it's almost as if the universal grace issue and the authority of Scripture, those theological issues came in the wake of our reaching out to the gay community. And, of course, once those issues, the theological issues, came out, there was no going back for me. And so that's where the disruption with the Reformed Church, the local we call it the classis, like the district, that's the group that came after me. Actually, on a national scene, I was in many national leadership positions in the Reformed Church over the years. I had many friends there. They felt very sad about it. But locally, that's where the authority lies. They have the jurisdiction over a local congregation. And long story short, we negotiated to leave. And we left with our property and paid them, I think, so many thousands of dollars over many years. It was the gay issue that then forced the broader discussion that eventuated in our separating ourselves from the denomination.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Reverend Richard Rem, and we're talking about his history and Christ Community Church and all of the amazing things that have happened to Reverend Rem during his lifetime of service. I'm guessing that by that time, most of the people in the congregation really weren't all that invested in the denomination, and you probably didn't lose a lot of people. Is that right?
That's true, Fred. When their classes came in one Sunday following the morning worship and had a meeting and where the congregation was to vote, 87% voted to leave.
Mm. And so Christ Community Church continued rather successfully for a number of years under your leadership. And so what happened to your ecclesiastical credentials?
My ecclesiastical credentials, I consider myself an ongoing ordained minister of the gospel, and a congregation actually can legitimate that standing. So even as Emeritus Christ Community at this point, I still hold my credentials.
So you maintained your position with Christ Community for how many years after separation from the denomination?
Well, let's see. I'd retired in 2004, and the separation, I think, was effected in 96, 97, maybe officially. So there was another 7-8 years of independence under my leadership.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk a little bit about the aftermath, if you will. So you left, another minister was brought in to carry on your work, and things really went in an interesting direction, from my understanding. And you can correct me if I say anything that you think is incorrect, that the person who took over your position then took the church in an even more extremely progressive direction, to the point where the name of the church was changed from Christ Community Church to C3 Exchange, indicating the street that you're on. You're on,
yeah.
M104 at Exchange Street. And apparently there was a significant exodus of people, and so much so that the church was lost, that the building, they could not afford to maintain the building, and the group continues to meet as C3 Exchange in a community building, a community center in Grand Haven.
Yes, that's right. True.
Yes, yes. So I'm not asking you to comment one way or another on... Oh, I forgot. As a postscript, the building that was Christ Community Church is now Harvest Bible Church, an independent, non-denominational, evangelical Christian church.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so all of that is true. So I'm not... I'm telling this story from a very neutral standpoint. I'm not saying this was good and that was bad or anything. I'm just quoting what happened. And I don't expect any comment from you on this, only to ask, in these ensuing years, from the point where the church was lost and all of that, did you have a number of former congregants who tried to get you back into the scene, or did they? Have you been allowed to retire in peace?
Well, I have been allowed to retire in peace. I hung in there for a couple of years, Fred, but the person who succeeded me obviously did not want any kind of continuity with that which had been established to that point. And, you know, every right in the world to go his own direction. I did stay for a couple of years and tried to be supportive. And I think I had prepared the people for that transition, and it was very positively received. But eventually, it got to the point where in my own spiritual life, it was not where I needed to be, wanted to be, and it was even awkward for me to be there, just as a presence there. And so I simply bowed out and stayed out. There were a couple of attempts of former congregational members to gather, I think what. And I stayed out of that. I played no leadership part whatsoever in that, but and I knew that was not my place. But I think that when they recognized the gigantuan task building a congregation, establishing the church, finally it just sort of dribbled out. And you'll find old Christ Community people in various congregations around the Tri-Cities. You'll find many of them who say how much we miss it and don't have any other alternative. And the good thing about having been nurtured under my ministry toward the end, they live by grace and are not, you know, cowering in a corner somewhere, damning the darkness. So I regret the fact that that rare and beautiful community from which I retired is no more. I regret that. But by the same token, Fred, some things are not in our hands.
Yes, exactly, exactly. What I'm gathering, and again, this is viewing it from afar, is you so kindly and humbly put it earlier that when you preached, when you were investigating, say, a scriptural understanding that you could no longer hold wholeheartedly, you presented it to the congregation as, well, I'm thinking about this. I'm inviting you on a journey with me. I get the impression that after you, the attitude from the pulpit was a little bit more like my way or the highway. It almost became a dogmatism unto itself from the left as opposed to the right. And that's just, again, my understanding, viewing it from afar, not from personal experience.
Yeah.
But
you know what? I had not thought of it in those terms, but I think you probably have hit on something that was one of the factors in the fact that the community unraveled as it did. Yeah, maybe there was not breathing room given for those who couldn't follow where it was going. You stated it well, Fred, and I think you have a point. Yeah.
Okay. Last week, before we ended the show, we dedicated a minute or two to your website, and I would ask you to do the same thing this week. Tell us about your website and what is there, how they can access apparently a voluminous amount of your sermons and papers.
Well, it was about 5-6 years ago. I was speaking at the Interfaith Center at Ganges, and three old Christ community couples were there, and they went out and had brunch, and they said, you know, what Dick is doing really ought to have a wider audience than the few pilgrims that come down to Ganges. So one of the people who was a lawyer came to my door on Monday morning with a letter, a formal letter. And long story short, six couples have worked for 5 years to create an archive. And it is under the auspices of the Kauffman Interfaith Institute and housed at Grand Valley University, which I'm very grateful for. It consists of sermons, prayers, funerals, addresses, articles that I've written, and it's all gathered under that one Richard Rem, small case Richard Rem, .org. That's the website, and once you get on the page, you can check prayers or sermons or articles or whatever, and I will assure you that there will be enough to put you to sleep for a long time.
Well, I appreciate that so much, and Richard, I appreciate your time with us both today and last week as well, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Fred. It's been my pleasure.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella. Reverend Richard Rem was our guest today. Please join us again next week.